Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from the fabulously fluoridated Auckland region. It's so nice with water scarce surfaces and all of that kind of jazz. Hey, they're now charging for wastewater back the other way, you know? So not only the water you drink, but also the water that goes down the sink they're charging for. You've got to love that, Shiite Muslim. My very special guest right now is, I believe, Wyeth Chalmers. Is that how it's pronounced?
Nice. Oh, look, it's good to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do, because we're doing a little bit of a Comedians of New Zealand sort of soiree here. And I'm not unfamiliar with your brand of comedy.
Okay, well, yeah, as you say, my name is Wyeth Chalmers. I've been doing comedy for about 6 years now. I made my name in the Wellington comedy scene. I've now moved down to Dunedin where I sort of run things. I run a comedy brand called Comic Addiction, and we put on shows here in the South. We've done a couple of tours recently. We're planning another one for August. I've been in two international comedy festivals. 2011, I was brought back as one of the best of the fest comedians, so all that sort of stuff. Yeah, that's who I am.
That's freaking awesome, bro. I have some want to be a comedian, mostly because part of my inspiration for becoming a talk radio douchebag behind a microphone was listening to really ranty kind of conspiracy theorists and Bill Hicks at the same time.
Yeah. I feel you.
Well, do you have sources of inspiration that you draw on or things that just keep you going? Because, I don't know, sometimes it's really hard to see the lighter side, for me, at least.
I mean, I'm always watching comedy and listening to as many new comedians as I can. I probably don't find enough time for that as I'd like, because one has to make money and things like that as well. But comedy certainly is a great passion of mine, and I think my ideas for comedy just come from stupid people. And fortunately, we're in a country that are just full to the brim. and so I can really play on those idiots, yeah.
So literally, when you walk in any city or town in the country, you were literally waltzing through a gallery of comic inspiration.
Oh, yeah. That's just the thing. Like, it could be anything. One of my favourite things to do used to be, if I was really bored, I would see somebody walking through the streets, and I would just stop and think about them and analyse them and stuff and realise all the stupid stuff they might do. And there's a joke there. Or my brain is very fast. It works all the time. I never really switch off.
Well, I was thinking that's very similar to how I look at things. It's almost like you see the truth of things, and it's really dark. And and the dark is really it kind of pisses me off. And so my brain works overtime trying to find trying to find something funny about it, so I could just deal with this crap that I'm seeing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're desperately clinging and scratching the darkness to try and find some way to deal with it. Yeah, I agree with you, man.
I mean, the diamond in the rough.
The diamond in the rough, yeah, it's there. There's that pinhole of light. What's that going to be? You know, let's run towards it. Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me in terms of it's almost like there's a prestige in presenting the news, and there's almost like a lovability or laughability with comics. And to me, it's actually become reversed, that I get my news from the comics and I laugh at the news reporters.
Yeah, exactly right. That is the way the wheels are turning. Because we're always finding things out, like every time before I get up on stage, you know, I'll find out what's just happened. There's my opening material, you know. What's going on right now? That's what I'm talking about, you know. I'm always changing and updating my material all the time. I'm not talking about the old stuff. I'm here. I'm present, you know.
Well, you have to be in the moment, don't you?
Yeah, that's right.
What do you feel is like the importance of, say, timing in comedy?
Timing, yes, you have to have a very astute sense, I suppose, of comic timing. I mean, for example, none of my jokes are written down. I just know that there's a whole lot of pinpoints in my head somewhere, and I need to run towards those as best I can throughout my sets, try and get back on track. Because I'm always jumping around and things like that. But, yeah, timing is very important.
Well, what is it that makes timing so important? I've been wondering this lately, because you'll see certain times where we have these brief pauses and then a comment that's even slightly quicker. And those sorts of things they turn into, I'm not sure what it is, if it's some sort of shock mechanism in the brain, whereby it's very similar to when you put a car in first gear and reverse at the same time, the car just goes
yeah, exactly right. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's a good way of looking at it. I think everything doesn't want to work at the same time, so you've got to use pauses. You've got to use. I mean, for example, actually, I'll jump to this because my brain's working now. There's those old jokes, and if you've got a classic joke, you know how it's told. There's one way to tell it with these pauses here. If you don't put those pauses in, then the joke's fucked. You know.
I have actually noticed that, like. I don't know if you ever tell jokes to your siblings, but I've been trying to tell a joke to my sister, but she's about to start watching Game of Thrones, so I wanted to tell her as quickly as possible without, and it wasn't funny in any way, shape or form, because it was just kind of like rambled out. There wasn't any effect.
Yeah. Or if you're telling a story about a party, oh, you should have been there, it was so funny, and then it seems really stupid afterwards.
Because obviously you're not
captured. Yeah. What's that, sorry?
Well, the reason why it seems stupid after you say, oh, you should have been there, it was so funny, because obviously I wasn't there, bro.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So there's no point in telling a story if you can't capture the funny elements of it. And as a comedian, that's our job, of course, are capturing those elements.
Yeah.
And you weren't there. You weren't inside my brain, but this is what was happening.
So I found those stories are really great from personal experience. Like my mate Red, he's not a comedian or anything, but he can spin a yarn, right? And he was talking about how he went to Aussie and one of these drug dogs came up to him. And he says, oh, doggy, aren't you nice? The dog goes,
Yeah. You know, I've always loved going into like backwater pubs and talking to the guy with no teeth that's half blind and pissed as shit in the corner. They're my favourite sort of people to talk to. People that really look like they've lived, you know, the most interesting people. I'll just sort of go in, amuse me. Come on, what do you got for me, huh?
G'day, how you going, you know?
You put on the character if you have to, but yeah. I'm always trying to absorb those people.
Is there a, for lack of a better term, a wanker element in the scene? I'm too good to hang out with people or be chilling on the level and that kind of thing. I've noticed it in my circuit of talk radio. There's a lot of people who are actually basically antisocial, but they have a gift for something that makes them have a public identity.
Yes, there you go. There are definitely two types of comedians. I suppose there are the guys that I would call a bit more wankery that are always out and about. You always see them, and they seem really arrogant, and they seem like they're above everybody. There is a bunch of those, but then there are just the people. I suppose I'm a bit more like that as well. Like I need my me time, you know, because I also do tour guiding and stuff as well. You know, I'm always speaking, talking to the people, doing edgy tours, things like that. And so I just need time to switch off. You know, every day I just come and that's it. I'm finished talking, you know.
Yeah, and there's a point in the day where you just go, excuse me, please, I can't have this conversation right now. I'm having my me time.
Yeah, I've actually just said too many words today. That's it for now. I'm strung out. That's me. I'm finished now. I've turned off.
Well, it's kind of like what happens to cheerleaders in high school. Apparently, they get hoarse throats and they can't talk.
They're just not allowed to. Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, it's just like they're screaming chants and things like that during practice for hours, and their voice just goes sometimes.
Yeah, or religious nutcases taking a vow of silence. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a column A and a little bit of column B going on.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, it's a reciprocal relationship, and this is the thing that I wanted to talk about in terms of being in the public eye, being on stage, across broadcast media, festivals and things of that nature. It gets to the point where you realise that you have less capacity to know the amount of people that can know of you.
And exactly right.
There is no possibility that you will know as many names of people who know your name. That sort of thing. Not talking about it in an arrogant sense of the word, but just thinking simple numbers.
Yes. Well, there is. There is only so many people you can know, and people go, "Do you remember me? I was at this show. I was at that show. I talked to you 10 years ago on the TV. All that sort of stuff." And you go, "Oh, did you just?" I get letters and stuff from like people that have come on my tours. I get a lot of fan mail and things from that element as well. People wanting to come to my shows, and they expect you to remember them. But I'm really great at talking to someone in person when I've got no idea who they are. No, it's a talent I've learned.
Me too. I mean, like, if you can't remember their name, I go for the personal pronouns, you know, like a word that stays instead of a name, like bro, dude, or cuz, man.
That sort of thing, yeah. And then you'll throw in a compliment there, like, "Oh, they're nice shoes, they do you justice. Anyway, what can I do for you?" Which throws in a bit of positive reinforcement, and they feel better and they don't care that you haven't said their name.
Mm. Often I profess ignorance and shame and say, I apologize, I have a terrible, appalling memory, and I've forgotten your name. Again.
And I've gone too far as well, where they start to talk about something serious and I really wish I'd asked them their name and I haven't done it. I get that too. And you've got to try and just work it into the conversation now, because they assume that you know their name, but you've got no idea. You're just struggling. You're thinking, "Oh, if they go to the toilet, maybe I could look through her handbag, find her wallet, find out her name. No, that's too invasive." Yeah, geez, you've got to think about that.
Mm. Well, I think it's all out of an effort to avoid embarrassment.
Avoid embarrassment, yeah. That's the thing, because we're frantically trying to run away from things that will embarrass us and not do them and do that and do. I just don't care myself, unless it's, like a professional thing like that I was talking about where I need to know the name. But of course, once the embarrassing thing happens, you remember it, you write a joke about it, you know?
Oh, yeah. I remember this time I was interviewing this lady from the gourmet soap kitchen, okay? Like, she makes these these artisan soaps and stuff like that for people with sensitive skin. Yeah. And I did this several-minute rant about the importance of eating good soup, you know, and how nutritious it is for you. It was so, so embarrassing.
Oh, my God.
I mean, like on live radio, you know, like thousands of listeners and stuff, and you just sitting there and you're like, "Oh, my God." That was pretty much the run of it, eh? And then she went on to become a sponsor of mine because she liked us.
Oh, my God. That's a fantastic story.
Now see, isn't it great how some of the best stories are the ones you can't make up?
Yeah, that's dead right. A lot of them are, and some of them are just in real just benign transactions in life that people don't think about. You know, like the dude in front of me at the ATM, what a weirdo he was, da-da-da-da-da. Things you could just never make up, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Well, it's more like the creative process, and this is why I'm kind of like, I wonder whether evolution's really onto it enough. I mean, I think that the opposite is true, that devolution certainly happens. I believe we're in a vigorous phase of it at the moment.
Yeah, we're going to go back. We're going backwards hard, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but at the end of the day, how can we put creativity in a spot and just go, okay, that's your limited space right there. don't frick anything. I mean, you know, we treat creativity now like a dangerous child or something of that nature that we want to keep safe. You know, stay within these bounds. Don't question that authority or these people who are telling you how to paint that picture. No. Don't go out on your own. Don't do your own thing. You've got to have some kind of a backup.
But apart from that, be creative.
Yeah,
that's exactly right, especially in New Zealand. We're still not as open to creativity in New Zealand because we're an island literally at the bottom of the world, you know? We don't have really intense pressure to keep moving and keep being open to things as much as we should.
Which is ironic because we're an incredibly well-travelled people. And I don't know about you, but any New Zealand band or comedian, artist, designers and virtually any creative field that I've seen are virtually top of their game in terms of world class.
That's right. And then, you'll do a show in a city and for some reason you'll get a really tiny audience. And you'll sit there and you'll try and figure out where did we go wrong? What else was on tonight? Okay, this and this. Is it because this? Is it because that? Sometimes there's no reason. Sometimes there is no reason why. It looked like it was going to rain this afternoon, and that turns out to be the reason. And whereas you go to, a different country there, they're asking for comedy. They're begging for it. They're not begging enough in New Zealand. They need to want it. They need to show us they want it a bit more. Some of the big comedians I noticed after the comedy festival this year were saying, hey, remember that we're funny all weeks of the year, not just the few weeks of Comedy Fest, you know? And I thought that was a good message.
Well, I think it really is because at the end of the day, you have to have your laughs daily, you know? Yep. I mean, apparently a child laughs several hundred times a day. I saw on one of the Comedy Fest ads, and that astounds me.
Yeah, exactly. Where do they find time to laugh? When are they serious, you know? Yeah, exactly. But no, that's good, though. How great is that? And how happy are those children that laugh all the time?
Freaking happy as Larry's.
Happy, yeah.
So cackling makes you actually happier just in general. It's not like you're depressed, therefore you can't laugh. I can laugh my ass off when I'm feeling rubbish.
Yeah. See, that's the best time. Sometimes in life, you know that you need to laugh. Think, oh fuck, oh I better laugh at something. Oh, I really could do with a laugh. If I laugh, everything will be better. You know, because it is a remedy. It literally is.
Well, have you looked into this kind of thing in terms of the scientific research? I'm not sure if you have. I certainly
Bit. I've done some classes on laughing therapy because I went to drama school and I did all that sort of stuff and film school and then all these institutions and learned a whole bunch of stuff and then performed. And based on this, I think there really is a solution, which is just group laughing. Group laughing makes people so much better. John Cleese, he toured this. He did a tour of Africa and Europe and places like that with laughing therapy. There's pictures of him online in African villages, just laughing with everybody. And they're all just having the best time. They don't know why they're laughing. They're just doing it. And people have the next few days so fantastic for them. And that's why. Because they took 10 minutes just to start laughing randomly at nothing. And you're not buying pills. You're not taking drugs, filling your system with chemicals. You're just fucking laughing.
Well, at the end of the day, if it's that powerful and that much of an antidepressant, wouldn't the drug companies try and shut comedy down?
Oh, God, that would be so. See, now... and one of my earlier shows this year, I did a piece on drugs. I was talking about pills and I was talking about this new Viagra drug and things, and I was laying into them. Fortunately, we had one of the comedy shows filmed for a TV episode earlier this year. And I just chose not to. I said, I won't do the drugs tonight because I always try and have a theme for my rant for 20 minutes, for 30 minutes, for whatever during a show. And, oh, see, if I had done that on national television, I wonder what would have happened there. But, yeah, I suppose the drug companies are against comedy.
Well, you know, I don't know about you, but I haven't seen a whole lot of these drug company pushers out there with big beaming smiles on their face in the congressional subcommittee hearings and stuff like that, you know?
No. Actually, it's funny you mention that because, you know, I was talking about the two people that advertise all the drugs from New Life Pharmacies that do all the television advertisements. Now, we probably think that they're pharmaceutical reps, that they're scientists or something. But I worked out that their title was something like Corporate Pharmaceutical New Drug Public Interface People. That just means...
public relations.
Yeah. PR people, they've got nothing to do with it, you know? And if we... like, we could talk about that forever. We could talk about how terrible drugs are and what they're doing to our society, but far out. Just have a laugh. Have a bloody laugh.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a hell of a lot easier to pop onto YouTube and watch a video of a comedian and have yourself a laugh than it is to pop down to your local doctor, get a prescription with a pill that has about 200 side effects, including death, suicide, murder-suicide, yes, liver failure, kidney failure, and scratchy skin.
Scratchy skin, brain hemorrhaging and rashing. Yeah, you know, all those little words that we never read because we're just keen on a quick fix. You
so
know?
Are there any negative side effects to not taking stuff seriously?
Oh, sure there are. You know, I mean, I can't tell you how many times important people to me have said, Wyeth, come on, take it more seriously. But that's just the nature of being a comedian. Like, I do have a very serious side, but sometimes I don't bring it out when I should.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, it's all a matter of timing.
It is a matter of timing, my friend.
In terms of getting this show on the road, we're coming to the end of the segment now, Wyeth. I very much thank you for your contributions to the show. I've actually had been having a few chuckles back here. If you have a website or some way of shamelessly self-promoting yourself, go for your life, because the show's very much like a bathtub, works not too well without a plug.
Absolutely. Comic Addiction on Facebook is our group. We're doing a show at Purple Rain in Dunedin on the 7th. We're doing a show in Invercargill on the 9th of August at 33 Live. And we're doing another show in Wanaka, yet to be decided.
Oh, that's going to be very nice. And we still have like another minute or so here. And lastly, can you tell me, what's one of the funniest things you've ever seen? I mean, in terms of your favourite comedians, one of the greatest jokes you've ever heard?
One of the greatest jokes I've ever heard. My favourite comedian is probably Frankie Boyle. His outlook on life is fantastic, you know, talking about Scottish people. Look, Scottish people need to relax more, which is why when we eat our shortbread, we always have some heroin with it. Just to relax a bit more and ease into the dull, depressing life and the drizzle of Scotland. He's one of my favourites.
Oh, that's gold. Oh, man. Well, it's been fun, Wyeth. Thank you very much for your time. And I also just wanted to give a wee plug for a few of our sponsors before we cut off to break, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, check out the Gourmet Soap Kitchen from Wagga Wagga on there on thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Volcania Coffee International, that's going to be starting up very soon. It's the very first world coffee company to ever be started specifically for the purpose of funding the production of alternative media like the Vinnie Eastwood Show. So there's a new business model for you. Check them out on Facebook there, Volcania International. Also, I wanted to give a special mention to the Blue Shield EMF protection devices. Mate, I unplugged mine the other day. I got sick in like 30 minutes. And after I got sick, like, now I'm talking about like a bit of a headache here, then came the rage. Oh, yeah. apparently all this EMF bouncing radiation wireless and crap and stuff is like emanating everywhere. But if you got like one signal, and it works the same with tuning forks, that's stronger than the other signals, then all the tuning forks tune in, i.e. the cells that are interpreting the signals tune into the strongest one in the room, which is the blue shield, which is a non-radiation signal. Same one like a 7 hertz frequency or whatever it is of the Earth, the natural one, cancels out all the rest. Reduces your stress. Freaking amazing stuff. They even put it on cows, gave them 10% more milk production in the Waikato. I found that bloody amazing myself. Wyeth Chalmers, my very special guest, thank you very much, and we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.